It's a real pleasure to have with me now Harris Kupperman. Harris has been investing for about two decades successfully. He started a hedge fund, Praetorian Capital, in 2003, and also shares his thoughts on adventuresincapitalism.com. Harris, the reason I really wanted to have this conversation with you today is because you've been quite outspoken lately on the tanker space and the companies in that space, because you see them really printing money in this environment. There's also a great article up on your website called Crude Contango that kind of goes into that thesis. And maybe I'll just turn it to you to kind of give us the gist of it, and then we'll have a Q&A.
Yeah, sure. Happy to be on your show. I've listened many times. So, you know, very big picture, what's happening is, you know, if you look out the window, I live on a street, there's usually a lot of cars going by, there's no cars. I usually hear airplanes coming overhead, there's no airplanes, like nothing's happening. Global oil demand is down dramatically. And that's not just in South Beach where I live, it's globally. If you look at what happened in China, demand dropped by about 25% and it stayed that way for 2 months. If you assume the rest of the world does sort of something similar, I don't think it's wrong to assume that global demand drops by 20 million barrels daily and stays there for about 50 days. I like big round numbers. And, you know, if I'm off by a few million barrels, I don't think it's going to change the math here, especially with the Saudis, you know, adding oil and, you know, the rest of OPEC joining in. So let's just say there's a billion barrel surplus. That's a lot of oil. And then when you look at what happens in the next 100 days after that, because if you look at what's happening in China, 2 months later, they're still not back to normal. You know, if you have a 10 million surplus for another 100 days, that's another billion barrels. So you basically have 150 days, 2 billion barrels of oil. And the question is where it all goes. And, you know, the problem is, you know, land storage fills up very fast and has to go in tankers. And there's a little over 800 very large crude tankers, VLCs. And as they start filling up, tanker rates are going to go crazy. And we've already seen tanker rates go crazy. You know, they're at all-time highs effectively. And, you know, just a quick math on this is that the guys storing oil, he's looking at the contango, which is basically the front month, discount to 12 months out. And right now on crude oil, you could store it and it's an $11 contango looking out a year. So if you have a VLC, which stores about 2 million barrels, you're looking at a $22 million profit for storing oil. And it's risk-free because you buy the oil today, you hedge it with futures, you've locked in $22 million, financing costs are negligible, there's a little bit of insurance and some other stuff, but let's not get too deep in the woods here. It's about $22 million profit, which is pretty phenomenal when you think that a 20-year-old tanker, which is the sort of tanker that would be storing crude, it's about a $25 million piece of equipment. And because the scrap value is about 20, you really only need about $5 million to hold this. So you make four times your money. And anyone who makes four times their money is going to do it as many times as they can in a year. And I think you're going to see a lot of tankers leave the transport fleet and go into the storage fleets. And as that happens, what it's going to do is it's going to push up rates for the tankers that are in the transport fleets. And we're already seeing that happen. You know, this time last year, a VLC was getting about $25,000 a day. We're at the seasonal weak point of the year. Right now, a VLC is getting north of $200,000. We've seen some signed at 300,000 a day. You know, we have pretty much never gone over 100,000 minus a few very short-lived spikes. But if you're getting 50,000 to store oil and it's costing you 20,000 to operate a vessel that's moving, you know, I think you have a pretty good chance that you're going to be seeing north of 100,000 a day as the new normal for a tanker and potentially much higher. But at $100,000 a day, after you take out your operating expense, you're kind of looking at about $30 million on a tanker that's worth about $50. And you know, when you think about it, you're going to be financing this thing, so you're probably about $20 million into it. So you're making about 1.5 times your money, and it's a really good return while the world's melting down because it's cash in your pocket. But the interesting thing is that we just went through the fastest collapse in the stock market in 100 years. Most of these tanker stocks are down quite a lot, so you know, you're making 1.5 times on your money, and this is assuming, you know, $100 oil, sorry, $100 lease rate. You're making about 1.5 times your time on your money, but you can actually buy these things at half of NAV. So really, you're making 3 times on your money. And if tanker rates were $200,000, you'd be making something like 7 times your money. So I think there's a pretty low risk setup here to make somewhere between 3 and 7 times your money. And then, you know, the interesting thing that I don't think anyone's talking about is if you think that oil prices drop from here, production is going to drop. No one's drilling wells right now. No one's doing any, you know, CapEx, nothing. So where do you think the curve is in 2023? Let's say we have a $10 million deficit by 2022. You know, is the 2023 oil price going to be at 75, 100? I don't really know where it's going to be, but I think it's going to stay steep very long in the curve. And if the curve stays steep, there's a lot of incentive for oil traders, you're talking the Vitols of the world, to store oil, constrict the fleet supply, and basically make a lot of money for my tanker stocks. And if this thing goes on for a few years, you know, you could potentially make 10 or 20 times your money. In something that's really low risk because you're buying it at half a net asset value with minimal, you know, financial leverage, depending on the company you choose. Now, I want to, you know, end by saying that, you know, 20 million barrels a day and 2 billion barrels is, it's a random guess of what's going to happen. But the more I see press releases from governors telling people to stay in their homes, the more likely that becomes conservative as opposed to aggressive. And then, you know, when I'm talking about tanker rates, I'm not using the theoretical. They're already paying $60,000 a day to store crude in 6 and 9 month charters, and they're already paying $200,000 to $300,000 a day for transport. So, you know, this isn't the theoretical what's going to happen. I'm saying this is already happening, and I think the trend will continue. So let's see what questions you have, because, you know, I kind of just rambled there, and it's sort of a complex topic.
Yeah, thank you so much for laying it out. I guess I'm going to try to poke holes in it or just kind of make sure I understand it correctly, because it just sounds incredibly compelling, frankly. So I'm kind of approaching this from someone who is getting excited about this. So what if there was some kind of a treatment or vaccine for COVID tomorrow, and we could stop with the quarantines and the lockdowns? How would that affect your thesis?
Well, look, I really do hope we find a treatment pretty soon. I also think that even if you have a treatment, the last week where everything's been shut down in the global economy, I mean, I think it's going to take months to get things back to normal. So maybe we don't do 20 million a day, we do 5 or 10 million a day of surplus. Plus the Saudis still want to gain market share. I think there's a lot of things playing out here that kind of protect the thesis. It doesn't mean we don't get to, you know, peak profitability here. Maybe, you know, you only make a bit of money. But, you know, my big picture view is that even if you had a vaccine tomorrow, it's probably a few weeks to roll it out. And, you know, look, oil production is going to fall off a cliff. I think everyone knows that. And that's really why I'm looking at the next 150 days. It's 5 months. That's the timeline between when people have a board meeting next month and they say, what do we do about this problem? And then they come back in 2 months and they say, man, we're going bankrupt. We're going to shut production. So, you know, and remember, these things work on a committee. You don't have men just go out there one day and flip a switch. That's just not how oil production works. You can't just shut it off because it's expensive to turn it back on. You want to be really sure you intend to shut it in for a while. So, no, I don't see it happening that way. But it might take some of the strength out of the thesis.
Okay, so you've kind of addressed this, you know, people saying, why don't Saudi and Russia just produce less? It's not that easy, it sounds like.
Well, it's out of Saudi's hands. I mean, look, when the Saudis announced that they were going to flood the market, I got super excited because I knew exactly what that meant. That meant buy as many tankers as you can, because they're going to need a few dozen vessels additional to move all the oil they intend to dump on the market. And, you know, tanker rates went from 40,000. This year we're a lot stronger than last year because, you know, tanker market's already been pretty strong the last 2 years. It's already a tight market. It's bullish. So I was already positioned, and I added a lot more. You know, but now it's out of the Saudis' hands. Look, the Saudis are adding 2 million incremental barrels, the rest of OPEC's another million. Like, we're talking about 20 million. It's a rounding error. It's really out of the Saudis' hands. So for the Saudis right now, it's more about saving face and showing the world that they're in control of the process when they're really not.
So then another question I have is, you know, this is super attractive to be buying crude oil in the spot market, storing it, selling, you know, futures a year out or whatnot. Why can the oil not be stored in other ways? You know, are there other storage capacity near ports, or can storage capacity come online quickly to kind of do this?
Look, there is there's above ground storage globally, but put this all in perspective, okay? You know, Trump had a big press conference and said we're going to fill it to the top. He's talking about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We're the richest, most powerful nation on this earth. He needs 75 million barrels. That's 2.5 days. You know, it's just a rounding error. The Chinese maybe have 100 million to fill. India is going to do their 25 or 50. You know, we'll fill up some strategic reserves. You know, there's a bit of spare capacity at refineries and terminals. And, you know, that's the first place you put it because it's cheaper. But that's all going to fill up in the next couple of weeks. And then where do you put it? And we're already seeing them put it onto vessels. Pretty much every day we see a handful of vessels get chartered. You know, it's actually a lot easier in many ways to put it on a vessel than it is to take it to storage, because you could just park the vessel offshore of the country that's exporting. You know, otherwise you need to charter a vessel and move it to somewhere that has spare capacity. So, yeah, it's going to happen, and, you know, it's going to fill in funny ways, but no, it's just too much. I mean, I've been following tankers for 20 years. They just booked two LR1s to hold jet fuel. I've never seen that done before, but no one knows what to do with all the jet fuel because no one's flying airplanes right now. And the refiner is going to keep producing it because it's configured to produce jet fuel. And that jet fuel has to go somewhere, and it's just sitting in an LR at 25,000 a day.
So these companies, you know, it sounds like they're going to make a ton of money in the coming, you know, 6 to 12 months. What if their capital allocation isn't what you want it to be, and they kind of think, wow, this is great, this is going to last for a while, and they start ordering more tankers, or instead of returning cash, or just kind of doing things that in the medium to long term are really going to crush the market, because all of a sudden you might have overcapacity of tankers once this is all over?
Oh, there's 100% chance that they will screw this all up. The history of tanker companies is the first couple quarters of excess profits, they pay down debt. Then they go do a bit of buyback and a bit of dividend and, you know, play the shareholder game. And then they order vessels. That's why these cycles tend to be very short and steep. If you think of a tanker, okay, you have a 20-year capital investment, and it probably only has two cycles where it earns all of its profits. The rest of the time, let's call it 17 or 18 years, it's probably going to lose money every day that it's in existence. So you got to make money when there's money to make. But if you can make 2 to 5 times your money every year, who cares what happens when they order the vessels? You're probably going to sell too soon rather than too late. And you're going to get paid. And that doesn't even assume, that assumes the stocks trade up to net asset value. If you look at prior cycles, these things tend to, at the bottom, trade on net asset value, so about half a net asset value. And at the top of the cycle, they tend to trade on a cash flow multiple or a dividend yield. Well, you know, they tend to trade at 2 or 3 times net asset value. So, you know, when you go backwards to my model and I said, you know, I think we can make 10 times our money in the next 2 years. Well, if you trade at 3 times NAV, you're making 30 times.
Harris, are we seeing the insiders buying these stocks? Because this has got to be obvious.
Yes. Yeah. They're buying every share that trades. you know, if you look at the insider filings, and a lot of them are blacked out, but you know, on multiple companies, we've seen insider filings in the past 2 weeks. Many of these companies have very active buyback programs in place. And as you can tell, you know, a buyback at half a NAV is very accretive. We've seen one CEO buy call options, which is kind of nutty when you think about buying 1 year call options, you know, out of the money call options. No, these guys are aggressively buying. and the companies are buying. They started buying last year, actually. So a lot of them are fully invested. What's funny about this cycle is, you know, it's a supply and demand industry. So last year, the supply and demand started getting in line. I mean, I've been writing about this for about a year, and you started seeing tanker rates start increasing. So for the first time since 2008, in 2019, tanker companies made quite a lot of money, and rates started going up a lot. And a lot of the tanker CEOs in the spring of 2019 kind of went all in. So it's not like they have that much excess cash to buy. And tanker stocks effectively doubled. Some of them almost tripled last year. And it was very good to me, by the way. It was very good to me. But then this coronavirus hit, and everyone just kind of panic sold stocks. And it had nothing to do with the tanker companies that were continuing to earn excess profits. You just had a sell everything motion. And so that's why these stocks are down. And, you know, I've seen a lot of CEO buying, but they were actually more active last year.
Interesting. There's a few names that you list on your website, DHT, Euronav, LPG, STNG, and TNK. Wondering whether you can just give us real quick on those, you know, who do you think is maybe the best capital allocators in that group? Where do you see the biggest leverage to this thesis that you just outlined?
I mean, I think it's kind of dangerous to get too deep in the weeds here in terms of individual companies. I think you need to play this with a basket. You need to take a view that you're probably dealing with, at best, B-plus management teams in terms of capital allocation, corporate governance. I'd say Euronav is probably the best in that regard. But, you know, it's still kind of B-plus management team. So keep that in mind. This isn't Berkshire Hathaway you put away for the rest of your lifetime. This is a 6 to 36 month investment that, if it works, you make a lot of money. And you probably want to sell too soon. In terms of most leverage, I think that's dangerous, because if you go for the most leverage, you may end up rolling craps, in that if something happens to the thesis, you know, you don't want to be in a massively financially leveraged thing. And I would tell you that they all have massive operating leverage, what's going to happen, and they all have massive financial leverage. In terms of capital allocation, look, their only choice is to buy shares or buy tankers or give you a dividend. And then they'll probably do some combination of all of those.
Have you ever seen contango in the oil market this big?
Yes. In 2009, the contango was 25. It didn't stay there that long, but tanker companies made an unfathomable amount of money in 2009 when the rest of the world was imploding. The difference is there was a V bottom, and the contango disappeared. Remember, in 2009, and you look forward to, and you look at like Q4, Q1, Q4 2008, Q1 2009, we were looking at a surplus of like a million, maybe 2 million barrels at the worst. So the contango got worked off pretty fast, especially because they had all the fiscal stimulus. When you look at what's happening now, I mean, you're 20 million barrels. You're looking at least a billion, maybe 2 or 3 billion of surplus. That's not going to work off. I think the contango, which is 11, I think it gets much worse. And I think it stays there for a long time. Just think about it. Let's say things normalize tomorrow. They almost normalize. Let's say, you know, a bunch of shale guys stop drilling. Production goes down. Let's say you're at a 5 million deficit, okay, which is a massive deficit in the oil industry. That's 5 million a day. It's going to take you 400 days to work off 2 billion barrels. I mean, that's a year and change. I just think this thing lasts longer. But yeah, there have been moments of extreme contango, and companies have made unfathomable amounts of money, particularly because as the demands, as the supply side starts trailing off, the back of the curve starts getting steeper and steeper, which lets the Vitals of the world just go out there, and they don't have to even play, you know, they could play all sorts of parts of the curve, hedging and locking in. I mean, if you look at the curve right now, I mean, we were talking about the 12-month curve just because that's how I think conceptually. But if you're looking at the 3-month curve, that's $5 steep. So you're going to, on a thing that's trading at 27, you're going to make $20 just basically rolling through that curve as Vitol. And so, you know, they're going to do the exact same thing, and they're going to make a ton of money. My tankers are going to make a ton of money. Everyone's going to be happy. And oil is going to be super cheap at the pump, so consumers are happy too.
Is there no possibility that the far end of the curve could just come down if people think we're in this, might be a depression, might be, you know, just kind of that the contango comes down because you can't sell it forward so high?
But I mean, when you think of the contango, it's just a curve. So yes, let's say we have a complete global depression. They make this thing as bad as possible. Well, the front part of the curve is going to just go through the floor. If you have to, if it's going to cost you $2 to $3 a month to store your oil, there's going to come a moment in time where the guys who actually own this stuff physical, they're just going to cry. They're going to literally sell it for zero or negative even, just because they can't stand losing $3 a month to store it on a tanker. You know, some part of the curve will be steep. But I also know that if you stop production because no one's making money, it's a commodity. Low prices are a cure for low prices. Some part of the curve is going to get very steep and people will hedge it all in.
Well, it's certainly a very interesting and compelling thesis. Really curious to see it play out in the coming months. And I do think that the insider buying also says a lot about, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, insiders are quite bullish here. I mean, look, there's a great conference call with the CFO of a company. The ticker symbol is LPG. I'm a shareholder of it. You know, net asset value is like $22 a share. It's trading for like $7 a share. And he's just giggling like a little kid on the interview yesterday, because they have this massive buyback in place and they're buying millions of dollars worth of stock every week at one-third of NAV. You know, you have this company that literally is a $350 million market cap, and I think they're doing somewhere between $50 and $100 million a quarter of cash flow. And they're just putting it all into buying back their own stock at a third of NAV. So, you know, these guys really do get it, some of them. And I think this is one of the great opportunities I've seen in my career. And that's why I wrote a post about it. And that's why I wrote a second post about it on my blog, Adventures in Capitalism, because I really just wanted to draw people's attention to it. Because, you know, there's a lot of opportunities out there to, you know, you could double your money sometimes and maybe triple your money. But it's really rare that you see something where, you know, it still might not work. But it's rare that you see something where you could potentially, you know, make 10 times your money and you're coming into something at half a NAV, which means your downside should be pretty restricted. And, you know, I've played this pretty big and I've taken off a lot of my other positions so I could just max this one out. So happy to come on and chat about it.
Can you see any reason why it wouldn't work?
I mean, look, if they stopped the quarantines, you're going to see demand come back faster. But then you have my poor dad who's 73 and he's scared to death and he's not going anywhere. Even if they tell you there's a vaccine, he's just not leaving the house. I think there's a lot of people like that. And I just don't think this comes back that fast. I mean, you know, think of me. I'm a bit less worried about the flu. I'm healthy. I'm, you know, reasonably young. But I have a bunch of conferences I go to each year. All my conferences are canceled. All the flights that I had booked, they're gone. I have no meetings planned. I have nothing. So, you know, even if you cure this tomorrow, all the conferences I was going to for the next 6 months aren't going to happen. Where am I going? Well, why am I traveling? So I just think this comes back slower than people think, and you're still going to have a glut. You know, you just might have a smaller glut. But what I'm saying is, even with a smaller glut, they're booking a few vessels a day at 50, 60,000 a day. And, you know, that's putting away a lot of tonnage, which means the guys that are actively transporting crude are getting north of 100. And, you know, it's just making the thesis work.
Fascinating.
I guess a final thing I should mention, and you know, I'm always pretty skeptical of government officials. They tend to take a problem and make it worse and then take credit for it. You know, I can't imagine which governor today wants to go out there and say, problem solved, it's safe, you go outside. Because even if the problem's solved, the risk is one or two people die. And that governor, you know, their career is done in politics. I mean, they might even get arrested. Who knows? I mean, we're kind of in crazy land here politically. I just think the incentive for everyone now that they've already destroyed the economy, is to make sure they actually beat this thing and keep people in quarantine longer than is needed, which is just going to build up the glut. You know, I think all the incentives say there's going to be a glut.
Absolutely. Great. Well, Harris, this has been really helpful. I would just point our members to your website for more on this, for a more in-depth write-up. And also, I recommend following you on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is HCuppy.
Yep.
And you know, you can follow me on venturesincapitalism.com.
Okay, great. Really appreciate it. Will be interesting to watch, and maybe we can reconvene when this all plays out.
Yeah, let's do an update in a few months.
Sounds good. All the best.
All right,
to
great.
You.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.